With a clear and earnest heart and mind, I direct my will to create harmony in my life.
So we'll start things off by defining what is free will.
So in the book, I talk about free will is a choice that we make to choose whatever path we want to pursue. Now, the thing with choice is it comes with responsibility. Before you make impactful decisions in your life, I think it's important that we ask ourselves, does this serve my soul, or am I just fulfilling a desire? And this was the topic that we brought up in the second chapter about fulfilling the soul's versus fulfilling the desire, or we sort of just phrased it back then, am I just fulfilling a desire? Mm-hmm. And is it purposeful? So again, this is something that we're revisiting. When it comes to free will, it can be tricky to manage. And in the book, I say that it's fun to play with, but potentially dangerous if mishandled. So free will, you know, is a choice that we make, but we have to realize that it may not be so freeing if you're making choices that aren't in alignment with your soul's purpose.
Mm-hmm. And so what should we seriously consider when we make a choice to select a certain path? Because going back to, again, what we talked about with chasing our desires and our mind coming up with what our path might be, what sort of things play a factor in deciding this?
Well, I think it's kind of should be self-reflective before you're making, you know, big choices in your life. Do they lead us to love, or do they lead us to heartache, or are they going to hurt or harm another person? Is it meaningful, productive in our lives? So, because I don't believe that free will gives us permission to wildly chase our desires, nor is it right for us to force the world around us to comply to our mind's opinions just to satisfy our ego's demands. Our soul really is an unbiased witness to life, and its nature is free and unattached to all of our endeavors. Mm-hmm. So,
and there's a quote in the beginning of this chapter that I'd like to quote. And it says, chasing desire is a fruitless pursuit that bastardizes the purpose of having free will. And then it continues on to say, the will of your soul is very different than the will of your mind. Very interesting quote.
See, and the thing is that my soul understands the duties I've agreed to in this life. And my soul is completely impartial to these duties. In my position of being impartial, I'm able to commit to my duties with fewer interruptions from the demands of my ego. Mm-hmm.
And so is it necessary to surrender your mind to access the will of your soul?
Well, the mind clouds our ability to know what the soul knows. So we have to surrender the mind to get into what the soul in us knows. Or the mind can't process what the soul knows because it's so vast. In the mind's designed only to handle what's been put into it, and that's all that it knows.
Because the thing is you say in your book that when you abandon the mind and the ego in order to surrender your will, your mind will then start to have a little bit of a temper tantrum about that, right?
Oh, yeah, very much. And surrendering the mind is basically the death of our ego. If you've got no mind controlling you, there's no problems. It's kind of like owning a gun. Our mind itself is not a problem. It's what you do with it that causes all the problems. When the mind is a tool, we know how to pick it up and set it down. There's no problem at all. You know, one day this young man came into my office and he wanted to take my workshop, How to Become a Gentleman. And I said, well, that's great. Wonderful. And I was really surprised because he was a young teen and he was coming on with his own free will, saying he wanted to learn how to learn some of the things I was teaching in my course. So I said, that's great. So are you sick of your mind? And his response kind of left me going, He says, no, I love my mind. Well, that just kind of ruined my whole shtick. I was basing what I was going to say next. I was predetermining what I was going to say next based on him saying, no, he's tired of his mind and he's going crazy and he wants help. But no, here's this young man and he's like, no, I love my mind. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's great. You're in a small league and that's wonderful. I'm really happy that you're in harmony with yourself or you have peace in your mind. I said, well, maybe you can answer this then. Can you shut it off? And he looks at me and he says, are you crazy? What do you mean shut it off? And I said, well, what good is it then? And this is sort of an analogy that I've shared many times in my life. I said to him, I said, well, it's similar to buying a car. I said, if you want a car and I have one for sale, you know, it's a good runner. It starts every time. It's really cheap. Mm-hmm. You want to buy the car? And so he looks at me, he says, okay, hypothetically, yes. And I said, well, here's the thing. I said, it's got the paint job is fantastic. You know, not a problem at all. And the paint, the transmission's great. You know, the fluids are all topped up. Nothing leaks. But when you get in it, if you want to go to Toronto, it'll take you to Windsor. And I said, and there's a, kind of a little thing about it is if you want to go to London, it actually takes you to St. Thomas. Is it? But it runs good and starts every time. Great battery. You will still want to buy the car. And he's kind of looking at me. And I said, well, if it doesn't take you where you want to go, it's pretty much of no use to you. And he says, yeah, pretty much. And I said, well, that's like your mind. You know, is even if you love it and it's great and it's working for you, if every time you get in your mind, it takes you where it wants to go, then what good is it to you?
Mm.
It's no good at all. So what we need to do is we learn how to surrender the mind so that it's really we're engaging the mind by choice. And it's not that the mind is engaging us and then we have no control over what happens next. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of the premise of most of my life. My mind would engage me, or rather I'd have one of my 100,000 thoughts. And then my life was completely controlled by that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say surrender your will and abandon your mind, absolutely. And it's going to be threatening to your ego, but what it's not threatening to is the soul and your ability to access your divine purpose here on earth.
And also too, your mind tends, and we talked about this at some point in this series, about how your mind tends to make things a little more complicated than necessary. That would include the simplest truth. So why does your mind have a tendency to do that?
The mind makes things complicated to reinforce its worth. And the mind can be very confused based on what we've put into it. And if something you say conflicts with something I have to say, then the mind will just make it a confusing mess. And it doesn't have the capacity to understand what's true and what's not true. And I think we talked about this earlier. The mind will accept whatever you put into it. So if you feed yourself, you feed your mind all kinds of delusions and grand ideas or any ideas at all, the mind will just take it in and accept it as your truth. Whereas the soul itself, it makes things simple. It doesn't complicate things. My soul, when I'm really resting in my soul, it takes the most complex things and makes them sound just like the easiest things in the world. And that's sort of, you know, what happened in my book is, you know, one of my reviews for the book, my friend Carol King said, I've taken complicated concepts and boiled them down into easy to follow concepts for the reader to digest. And that was when you have a truth, when you're in truth, it's not that complicated. It's the mind that makes things complicated. It wants to claim its worth, and our ego wants to feel intelligent and wise.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the moment, because we know, we talked about this as well, that the progression of life is nonlinear. And so how does becoming more present bring clarity to the randomness of life?
Because there's more order than what appears to be. On the surface, it looks like there's random acts. But in reality, there's a great deal of order to these random acts. When you learn how to become super conscious or completely aware of this moment, the things that don't make sense are still serving a purpose in your life. You begin to sense on a deeper level that yes, no. And that was sort of like the story I told about when I met the artist Paul Duff, and my little brother and I were at the powwow. And so it was a random thing that came up in me and said, turn right. And my mind would not make sense of that. And it could not make sense of how or why. But there was this part of me that knew that was what I had to do. So I was present with what was going on inside of me. I was present with my intuition. I was present with my soul. And so that's how we accept these random acts more readily. And we just have a sense that there's something in this direction, and we learn how to trust that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little part of this that, you know, we sometimes have to be a little bit more agreeable to life and allow ourselves to flow with life, like a yes to life kind of attitude. You know, there's so many things that, you know, we reject because we don't realize, you know, it's something we've asked for, but we just don't know that we asked for that. Like if you want apples and the neighbor shows up with an apple pie and you say, no, I don't want an apple pie. Well, you just got your apples. And so that's the thing about life, is it's things aren't going to because you ask for one thing, it doesn't mean it's going to manifest in your reality as the exact thing that you've asked for, but it could very well be the apples that you ordered.
Interesting. So how can we discern where our will comes from?
It's by asking yourself, is this purposeful, and is this in alignment with my soul? And you can quickly determine what's a desire and what's a knowingness in your heart. And the thing of it is that it's not that the soul has a will per se. It's more like it has a destiny or a knowingness about it. So it's not like the will's going to ask for $1 million, or the will or the destiny that's in your soul, it never wants for things that's going to take away from another person. It's only desires in our mind that would ever want to take away from another or to participate in anything that wasn't giving to all.
Mm-hmm. And so does God have will?
Yeah. And I kind of let this one out of the bag quite a while ago. And God's will is actually our purpose. And God's will is found inside of each and everybody's purpose. I used to look at the concept of God's will as being, you know, this thing that it was written in the Bible and it was written in stone. And I never could seem to get with this fire and brimstone mentality that this is God's will and this book has it all. And I, you know, something inside of me said, I don't think that's entirely true. Or maybe that's better thought of as instructions for life or, but what I've come to realize in me is, and this is only my realization, and it's what feels right and aligned with my understanding of my soul is that before I came here, my soul had a destiny and a purpose. And if my soul had this destiny and purpose, and it my soul came from God and is God, so that destiny and purpose in my soul is actually God's will in me. And all I have to do is actualize my purpose, and I'm fulfilling God's will. That's massive. Like, think about that. Think about the implications of that. If I fulfill my purpose, I'm fulfilling God's will. Like God Almighty. And its will is ripping through me just by me doing me. You know, and another thing about our purpose is that when we live our purpose, it's actually the life that's tailored specifically for us. And it's the most joyful, amazing trip that you'll ever go on. It's only when you live a life that's not yours, or you live a life that's that the person or thing that's steering it is your mind, not your soul. That's when life gets terrible. That's when when things seem to really stack up on you, when your mind is trying to run the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So you say in the book that our soul continues until it has communion with the divine, at which point it dissolves into oneness of all. What does that mean exactly?
Well, there's layers to the soul. As you dive deeper into your experience with the soul, who and what you are dissolves the ego. By knowing your soul, your ego begins to dissolve. The presence of God begins to fill you up more and more, and who you think you are is nothing but a myth. So, and you think of it, like if you actually have the experience where you're letting go of the mind and you're going inward to the soul, that 90% of who you think you are is already, or 75% is already gone away just from alleviating yourself from the thoughts in your head. You dissolve a massive portion of your ego by taking a deferment from those words dropping in your mind. So you're once you defer yourself from your thoughts, you're half the way there, or three quarters of the way there. And then once you defer yourself from what that you feel and stop labeling your feelings as you, mm-hmm. you start to actually have a chance to go inward toward your union with God. And then in that union, you dissolve any sense of what you thought was you, and your oneness with God just starts to happen.
Ceaselessly staying with God is the deepest devotion you can offer to God.
And what do you mean by God's grace?
God's grace is the greater intelligence in life. So understanding God's grace allows you to accept life and flow with it. Understanding of what God's grace at work is doing, it gives you permission to manifest your duties more swiftly. So understanding that the grace of God is this divine intelligence that just kind of comes in and we go along for the ride with it. It's the thing that I will accredit a great amount of the miracles that are taking place around us. It's by the grace of God that the flowers open up every morning. It's by the grace of God that you know, you and I are sitting here, that we're collaborating and we're cooperative enough to produce this series that we hope will, by the grace of God, open up hearts and minds of our fellows.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So that is the persuasion of God? Is that what the grace of God really means?
More the power and the intelligence of what God is the grace, God's grace.
So how do we become more conscious of the grace of God?
By entering the sacredness of this moment now. By truly embracing this eternal moment now. You know, and it's by surrendering the will of the mind and surrendering ourselves over to our soul.
Mm-hmm. And by doing that, what happens to us?
It puts us in a communion or a relationship with the divine. That's exactly what happens, is our relationship with God deepens and sweetens.
What happens to us when we look towards our soul or toward love?
This reminds me of something that Thomas Keating said, and this is his theory, is when we look toward our soul or we look toward love, we're basically looking toward God. So when we look toward God, we just have to look, and God moves all the rest of the way to us. And I found that such an interesting yet a comforting thought. And then I went back and I kind of related it to my life. What does that mean in relation to my life? So I went back to one of my darker times when God wasn't in my vocabulary, and the word bugged me. I thought it was irritating. So you wouldn't catch me saying it. And the word God's probably bugging the shit out of some of our readers right now or listeners right now. But it's, when I talk about God, it's in the internal sense, not the external God. But it reminded me when I was struggling the most, and I looked towards God and I asked for help. And I just sat where I was, and the next day, that doctor, like within a few days, that doctor was calling me. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just funny how all we have to do is just take a glance towards, you know, what it is that we want in life. We just keep looking at that, and it moves to us. So that same principle applies to when we were talking about creation and manifesting our reality. We look toward what we want, and it moves the rest of the way to us, fully formed. And all we have to do is just kind of trot along with it. Well, it plays out its dance of creation.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think that anybody would have, or do you think it would be a common response to have some impatience with that?
Only if your mind's engaged. You know, when the mind's engaged, it starts working out the details, which is not necessary. You know, it'd be like going to the garage and having a mechanic change your transmission. Your mind might say, well, this thing should be done by now, but they may have broken off a bolt trying to get it out.
Yeah, right.
We don't know how life's going to unfold, and to insert the mind into the equation only just retards the whole process. It just holds things up further when we interject our mind. Whereas if the heart suddenly has a knowingness and or an intuition comes to us, by all means, you jump onto that. But when it's just the mind objecting to the moment, it's better surrendered.
And so how do we follow our hearts?
It takes practice. I honestly feel like it's a practice, and we have to constantly be willing to stay practicing setting our mind down.
So you're saying that you are surrendering your free will?
Yes and no. You surrender the will of your mind, but you live in the will of your soul. So you live in that knowingness of who you are. And so you are surrendering the part of, you're surrendering desire versus will.
Mm-hmm. There's a quote here that reads from the book, "We receive guidance from our soul by moving outside the context of our mind. By doing so, the guidance deep within us gets louder and clearer." So this is a practice?
Yep. Every day. Mm-hmm. Every day. And it's been my practice every day.
And what lies ahead if we are willing, and that's the key word there, if we're willing to surrender to our soul?
Endless possibilities and purposeful endeavors. which all leads us to fulfilling our purpose, which leads to peace and union with God.
Now, this is a quote that you had told me when you read it one morning. This throttled you pretty hard. And I just want to read it real quick. It says, "Ceaselessly staying with God is the deepest devotion you can offer God." Well, what's the full message behind that? Like, what was it about that actually that registered with you so strongly that morning when you read that?
It's sort of the resonance that builds. And so when I was going back through the material in the book, I felt like I was just ceaselessly staying with the presence of my soul and staying with God. And then there was sort of a momentum that built up. And then through that momentum, there was a resonance. And I fell into such a deep interior silence within me. And I just kept staying with it without the need to move out into my mind. I just stayed inside of that interior silence found in me. And then it just kept getting richer and richer. And I realized that it's the deepest devotion I can offer to God, because it puts me in unity with God by staying with God all the time. There's no other devotion that gets us in the realm of being with our Creator.
Mm-hmm. And you move on to say that by giving your devotion to your soul is how we ceaselessly stay with God.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of an interesting thing as well, is your take on the concept of heaven on earth.
I believe that heaven is imminent. It's at hand in this present moment. I don't see that heaven is a future reward or a great promise. It's discovered by deepening your relationship with God and by loving each other. You know, I believe it's here in this moment. It's not something that we dangle over each other and say, if you don't behave, you don't get your heaven. You know, it's not like threatening dessert to a child because if they behave. And this is a concept that we've been fed, that heaven is the dessert or the reward for being behave. And I don't see it as such. I think it's a solid, stable reality that lives in this place right now. And Jesus said in the Bible itself, the kingdom of heaven is imminent. It's at hand. You know, and so was he lying? You know, this is my take on heaven, is that if we begin to love, we enter the realm of heaven here now. And can you imagine if we all really started to love and support each other? And we surrender to the will of our souls, how heaven on earth would just be it would actually manifest in all of our experience. We would all be experiencing a heaven on earth.
Yeah.
If we could just learn how to love one another. I see it as a possible outcome or a reality. I do have realistic ideals, but I do see this as something that's obtainable, you know, and that's sort of what kind of keeps me fired up and keeps me moving forward, and it keeps me working on my campaign of Be Love, is it's the possibility of us all really embracing that heaven on earth.
What do you think the effects are to people when they think that heaven is simply a reward?
Well, heaven and hell, you know, I've got a quote here. And it says, heaven and hell are temporary results of the karmic path we walk upon this earth, whereas the soul is eternal life of God. When we think that heaven is just a treat for being good, it's sort of making fear to be your motivation to love. If your intention is built upon fear, how much power does that intention really have? Mm-hmm. If my intention is built around love, then that intention to me becomes a superpower, and it actually contains the grace of God in that intention. With when we include love in our intentions, mm-hmm. So we don't try to behave to get to heaven, this made up reality, this hamburger reality of heaven and hell. You know, I think we should intend to be loving, and the result is that we experience heaven.
I don't know. The other thing too is that it's difficult to say that. Let me present this to you. Do you have any ideas or concepts as what happens when we die?
I'll tell you next life.
Because here's the thing. I don't know what happens.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone does.
No.
I mean, if we're putting all of our eggs in the basket that when we die, that's when heaven happens. Like that's when we go to heaven. That seems to me like quite a sacrifice for the life that we're living today that we can actually count on. Like, we can only count on the moment, right? I mean, like, an hour from now, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, through patterns and so on, and yes, I've lived hour to hour now for 33 years, it becomes an expectation that I'm going to keep living an hour from now. But who's to say that that's happened? And I know for a fact that life has a way in changing rather quickly, as it's happened to me. And it's happened to a lot of people. And we can't assume anything is going to happen after this moment. It could be nothing. It could be that's the end of your time now. And now how do we know what comes after that? So it seems to me like if we're trying to create a heaven now on earth in the moments that we have available to us, and if all of us collectively in the world thought like that, and that's our mission, to try to create something more harmonious on the planet, that seems like a far more grounded guarantee than just waiting through life for something at the end that we've been promised.
Yeah, it supports this whole hamburger reality that's all, and it's a concept that's based on fear. So when it comes to the concept of heaven, if it doesn't have anything to do with love, then it has nothing to do with God. And my concept of heaven is more about when we love, we enter the gates, and the grace of God moves us swiftly into heaven that lies within us. You know, in Luke, in the Bible, they do talk about heaven is within, and it's inside your heart. It's a dimension inside of you. Our destiny is actualized by allowing God's will to manifest through us. For God's will is the destiny of our soul. Once we realize that God's will and the soul's purpose/destiny are one of the same, we surrender to God without the opposition of our mind. As we unite into God's will, God's grace enters our lives, gifting us with divine favor. Creating God's will is the work of the soul, and it also allows us to be brought into union with our true self. The will of God's love is forever accessible. There's never a time when you are beyond its reach. Consciously surrendering your life to your soul's will makes your life an instrument of God, causing you to be the right hand of God. Becoming an instrument of God positions you as close as you can humanly get to the brilliance of God's love. It illuminates the path you are on and removes many of your struggles. With great persistence to execute your soul's will, you place yourself on the path to experience a depth of love that you have only dreamed about. It is a love that is so pure that being in its presence nourishes your soul for eternity. Let the grace of God's love remove all doubt in you. By doing so, it makes anything possible. The fastest way to experience love from the divine is to give your consent. By inviting God to be with you in your life, God's love can work more freely through you. This is your choice. It's not one that you should be bribed into. God has no desires for you. Your consent must come freely, not through fear of consequence that you'll be punished if you do not consent to God. Fear has no place in your relationship with the divine. According to Thomas Keating in his book, Intimacy with God, An Introduction to Centering Prayer, fear of God is a technical term in the Old Testament, meaning the right relationship with God. It does not refer to the emotion of fear. Having a fearless relationship with God is a fundamental understanding that helps develop a deeper relationship with the divine and the love that is available to you. It's much easier to freely come to God knowing that your relationship is based in love and not fear or judgment. God inflicts no evil punishments onto you, nor does the divine restrict its love to you. It's we who judges ourselves and restricts ourselves from love.
Heaven and hell are temporary results of the karmic path we walk upon this earth, whereas the soul is the eternal life of God.